Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, Pope Benedict's call for prayers so that participants at the Mideast Summit in Annapolis will find the courage to commit to peace. We talk to one Palestinian Catholic who's hoping delegates will also get the concrete international help they'll need to succeed. And two Vatican conferences focus on the social challenges of our times, one on the homeless, the other on social development and justice and peace. We'll hear from delegates on both of those topics. Leaders and top officials from more than 40 nations are gathering in Annapolis, Maryland for the first major multinational Israeli-Palestinian peace summit in 7 years. On Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI called for prayers so that the participants would have what he called the wisdom and courage to find a solution for peace in the region.
Ad Annapolis, negli Stati Uniti, israeliani e palestinesi, con l'aiuto della comunità internazionale, intendono rilanciare il processo negoziale per trovare una soluzione giusta e definitiva.
The Pope said that the Annapolis summit was an effort to relaunch negotiations to find a just and definitive solution to the conflict, which for 60 years has bloodied the Holy Land and provoked so many tears and suffering among two peoples. The Holy See has sent a delegation to Annapolis. Well, earlier I spoke to Latin Patriarchate Father Raed Abu Salia of the mostly Christian West Bank village of Taibe. I asked him what hopes he and other Palestinians had for the Annapolis meeting.
First of all, we are very glad they are meeting, at least, because since more than 7 years, all the peace process is blocked. Now, at least they are meeting, and there is a very strong presence of the Arab world, which might also help to support the Palestinian position. The second thing is that we hope that there will be a clear and direct common declaration between both sides, not only some talks. I hope also that there will be a timetable for the negotiation, that we will not waste another 15 years in negotiating. And if they reach any kind of agreement, to implement it on the ground as soon as possible, once forever, in a very short period of time. So for this reason, I am afraid, since the meetings between Olmert and Abbas and the Palestinians in Israeli side, since more than 3 months, they were always upset about these issues. Timetable, a clear common declaration, and some misunderstandings about the implementation of the agreement.
However, how much credence will Palestinians in general be giving to what comes out of the Annapolis meeting with Hamas staying home? They are not participating.
That Mr. Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority and the PLO represent the Palestinian people, and they are democratically elected to do that. So I think that Mr. Abu Mazen himself and the Palestinian side is very serious, and they can take historical decisions. Now, of course, when they come back, they should open the door with a dialogue with Hamas. And also, they have to resolve this conflict between Fatah and Hamas and unify the Palestinian people, because the West Bank and East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip are a same entity. But to do that, Annapolis, and especially the American administration and the Israeli side, should help Abu Mazen to have some achievements in hand to convince the Palestinian people that the process is not only talks, but it is a serious talks, and will achieve practical resolutions. If the Palestinians will notice that their life will be easier and not as complicated as it is now, they will support. At the end, they told, even if Hamas will not agree on the final decisions, they will go back to the Palestinian people and a referendum. And the Palestinian people will say his word. And I think, since we are so tired, since that the situation is very difficult, and since we are all looking forward to a real peace process and into this conflict and end of the occupation and the realization of a Palestinian state, the Palestinian people will support any genuine peace agreement.
What do you think about the participation of Syria and Lebanon in these talks? They were sort of last-minute decisions to participate.
This is, first of all, part of the Arab League plan, and the Arab countries, they are supporting the peace process. Because in this case, if they agree on the Arab plan, the Arab League plan is very clear. Full recognition in exchange of full withdrawal. The Arab League plan is a golden occasion for the international community and especially Israel. Full withdrawal in exchange of full recognition, which means that all the Arab countries will recognize the right of Israel to exist. I think Syria and Lebanon are part of the conflict, and if they participated, it means that they have the intention to open also a dialogue and negotiation with Israel. And the Syrian position, at least, is very clear. Withdraw from the Golan Heights, and we will have peace with Israel. It is so easy. They have occupied it in 6 days. Why do they need 38 years to withdraw? So I think that we have to encourage to have a comprehensive peace agreement, not only with the Palestinians, but with Lebanese and Syrians. At the end, it will be with the whole Arab world and maybe also the Islamic world, which will be a very good result, hopefully.
Latin Patriarchate Father Raed Abu Salia of the West Bank village of Taibe. In the Vatican, experts from 28 countries are attending a 2-day conference focusing on the problems facing homeless people. The gathering has been organized by the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People and follows 2 previous meetings on related issues, one dealing with street children and the other dealing with women and prostitution. Well, the aim of this week's meeting is to share information on the phenomenon of the homeless and discuss new methods for helping these people who live on the margins of society. There are an estimated 1 billion people who do not have a fixed home, and all too often their plight is ignored or overlooked by the rest of the population. The Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People is Archbishop Agostino Marchetto, who spoke to Susie Hodges about why they decided to convene this conference.
We decided that we have to do an effort also in this, I think, very, very important aspect, because there are many, many people and we do not see them many times, but they are living in a very difficult condition.
Do you think there are many false stereotypes about the homeless and why they are homeless?
Yes, in fact, in my speech I mentioned this. Sometimes the first thing to be done is to overcome the stereotypes and to try to see that even the words we are using to identify them must be changed, because sometimes we have the risk that we do not see the persons, but we see the people identified with a certain name. So I think the first thing is, and it is difficult to give another name, but the first thing is to try to overcome stereotypes and to go to the person. They are persons like us, even in situations which are not very human.
Do you think in most countries it's more often adults that are homeless, or is it actually quite evenly divided between adults and children?
Yes, I don't think I am able to give an exact answer to this question because it depends from different countries. But in any case, during our Congress for the street, children of the street, we said there are 100 million children living in the road. So I think it is a very big number.
Many people who live on the streets actually don't want to leave the streets, do they? Would you say that that is quite a large minority of the people?
It is difficult to answer, but we also mentioned this fact that it is not easy for the people to go out of this circle. Many have found a certain kind of companionship. They have friends. They have a certain way of doing and living. And for many, it is not desirable to go out. And sometimes we cannot...
You cannot force them.
Yes, oblige them, yeah? Or you cannot force. We must combine freedom and convictions. I mean, we must be near to them and respect them in their choice.
One of the participants at the conference was Emilia James, director of a Jesuit-sponsored rehabilitation center for homeless children in the Zimbabwean capital, Harare. Zimbabwe is in the throes of a severe economic crisis with hyperinflation and chronic food and fuel shortages. She told Hodges the situation is getting worse by the day, but she and others in the church are trying to provide people with hope.
As much as it is a national phenomenon, this economic crisis, I have to say that there are a lot of, you know, local initiatives. We always are challenged as Zimbabweans to say this is a Zimbabwean problem. Yes, it's difficult economically, prices are escalating, etc. It is difficult. But, well, we believe, you know, with God on our side, we're Christian-based organizations. I can say we are struggling, but we'll definitely get there. There isn't a day which goes without us having food on the table for the children, as much as it is tough for us.
But presumably there's many more children that you could help, but you simply are not able to. So what happens to these children?
There are a number of organizations which also cater different services. Like ours, we are a rehabilitation center. They come and stay for us for a period of months. And there are others who also offer drop-in services. And there are others who also, even including ourselves, when we've reunited or reintegrated these children, we sort of do not dump them like that, but we keep on supporting them by linking them to ongoing support systems. So there are also a number of church organizations, individuals who help in their own way.
But do you have any idea of, say, in Harare, how many children there are living on the street?
Data from the Central Statistical Office highlights that there are around 10,000. But as I told you earlier, that at times official figures may not be reflecting exactly what is going on because of their mobility aspect. So that is the figure that I can give you. And also to reiterate once more on the fact that they are also increasing on a daily basis.
Are there also many adults living on the street now?
Yes, they are. There is a sad trend. Like myself, for example, I've been involved in working with the marginalized or stripped children for the past 14 years. And it's so sad to find some of them, you know, graduating to become street adults. So they are there.
How would you describe, though, the morale of the Zimbabwe people? Because, I mean, your country is going through a singularly difficult time.
It's mixed. For others, the others are quite okay. And others, you know, are living below the poverty term line, of which I believe each and every, you know, country has such people. And in terms of the morale, I can say as much as, you know, things won't be, you know, going all that well for the majority, but it's also a matter of utilizing that which is there, pulling resources together and making things work, you know, for the better of everyone. Because to me, if people always sit down, you know, and always complain things are bad, without trying to do something, you know, to get oneself out of that situation, you actually get yourself more depressed. So it's also a matter of trying to find opportunities when things are really tough like that. So as much as morale is really down, but I can also say people are really trying to motivate each other. Like, for example, the church is also trying to motivate even the marginalized that we work for, to say even if things are tough or difficult like this, that there are other people who are there for you, who are really thinking about you.
Amelia James is director of a Jesuit-sponsored rehabilitation center for homeless children in Harare, Zimbabwe. And earlier, we heard from the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants, Archbishop Agostino Marchetto. The development of the whole man and of all men. Pope Paul VI mapped out his plan for the Catholic Church's social teaching on development 40 years ago in his encyclical Populorum Progressio. And to remember that landmark document here in Rome, the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace organized last week the Second World Congress of Ecclesial Organizations Working for Justice and Peace. More than 300 delegates from over 80 countries participated in the meeting. One of them was executive director of the Washington-based Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, Alexia Kelly. I asked her why her organization thought it was so important to attend this meeting.
Our mission, the focus of our mission is to promote awareness in the United States, in particular of the Catholic social tradition and Catholic social teaching. And so this opportunity to come and reflect with justice and peace leaders within the church from around the world, whose that is their primary mission, was a great opportunity for us, I think, to make relationships and connections with the global church and to reflect on the Populorum Progressio, which they were commemorating the 40th anniversary of that document. We're also working on a book, our organization, myself and my deputy director, on Catholic social tradition, Catholic social doctrine, and particularly the vision of the common good for Americans to understand that within our public life. And so I think it was a good opportunity to come to Rome and to reflect on the Catholic social doctrine, which was one of the focus areas of the meeting.
Explain this concept of the common good for people who are not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a central principle in the Catholic social tradition. I met a Nigerian priest at this conference who looked at our organizational title. He said, the common good. It's throughout Catholic social teaching, and it's really a central principle in all the documents, the encyclicals. And it's interesting because I think in the United States, it's certainly not understood in our culture and our political culture and social culture. It's not a driving sort of vision or concept. But in the Catholic social tradition, it really means it's very substantive and also very specific. And there's a sense of we're all interdependent. We both have individual dignity, but we're created to live in society and in community, and we're dependent on other people. And so our policies and our social structures and society needs to be created and acting in such a way that it supports everybody and that everyone can reach their potential and everyone has an opportunity to flourish and that other people's well-being relates to ours, that we're connected. So when one person is suffering, we all suffer. And in Catholic social teaching, it developed over time and then became quite a global principle. The universal common good was understood as a global reality. So, you know, when someone in Nigeria or the Philippines is suffering, when that country is not doing well, the United States or Italy is also suffering. So, but a sense of creating policies too. I mean, there's a political public policy dimension that we have to influence as lay people and as the church try to influence our societies so that the structures and policies and culture benefits everyone and not just the few, that it's not just the privileged who are flourishing, but that everyone has an opportunity to flourish, and that that promotes the greater good, the public well-being, the common good of everyone.
In fact, that came out quite strongly in Populorum Progressio when Paul VI wrote basically that it is the individual. We have to be looking at the individual and the community. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a revolutionary concept back then. Instead of looking, I mean, it was before the internet, before computers even, before this concept of globalization, world travel in airplanes. Everybody now can buy a cheap ticket. So our world is getting smaller. And Paul VI was saying, way before this time, we have got to look at the individual, the progress of the individual in within a community.
And he was challenging, really, it was very much focused on development, a sense of integral human development and economic, international economic development, but that we had to redefine that to be focused on the good of the person, of humanity. So you had to look at how human development was helped. So you weren't, and it wasn't just a material development. More stuff, more goods and products was not enough, and that even wealthy societies could their common good and humanity could be threatened by just an excessive materialism. So when we're looking at solidarity and partnering with developing countries to support their development, it's not just a material acquisition of goods, that you can't just look at that. But I think Catholic social teaching is very countercultural in a way, and has always challenged this focus on excessive focus on individualism and just individual rights. That human rights are important, certainly, and they are the core of Western society. But we can't have an unbalanced understanding of just the individual's right to something. That the individual's rights are reach their potential are met also in community. So you have to look at how the community thrives as well, and that's where your rights are accomplished.
What's interesting that you bring up the idea of a consumeristic society where the individual is the center and it's me, 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 I want this, and I'm going to buy myself a new iPod and the stereo and all these things. We just passed Thanksgiving, and on all of the Italian television networks, we were seeing images of Americans flooding the supermarkets and the malls and buying frantically. You know, it seems like, I mean, for us living here in Europe, it's quite a strange image, but when you're living it in America, the message is consume, consume, consume.
Mm-hmm, certainly. And that's a challenge of the Catholic social tradition, but it doesn't permeate very well in our American culture, that the message and our, you know, there's certainly economic other messages we get to go shopping and help the economy. But we're at our organization that I work with, that I run, Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good. We're actually conducting an awareness campaign starting next week, December 4th, I think it is, a media and awareness campaign, public education campaign around Christmas, and how the real, you know, to bring our attention back through the mass media, so reaching Catholics and Americans through contemporary media with this message that Christmas is about family and community and love of one's neighbor, and that is why, you know, Jesus was born to bring us this good news, and we have to focus on what that good news is for our communities and in our families, and that the excessive consumerism, while giving gifts is a good, can be an excellent, you know, metaphor and a way to express love, God's love, and our love for our families and friends. It can also be a distraction if it becomes too excessive, and it can distract us from the real message of Christmas. So we're going to do a lot of public education messaging work around that that theme for the next month.
In what way?
Well, we're doing an advertising effort in some newspapers. We have a media program, and we help to place editorials, op-ed pieces, they're called, in secular and religious newspapers. So we'll be doing that. And we have a website that's linked to our website on Christmas that provides alternative giving opportunities for families, you know, the Haifa Project, and ways to help your giving and shopping be something that supports the common good and global development, as well as gift giving.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not all tinsel and Santa Claus, right, and so on.
But we don't want to be come across as the Grinch either, you know, saying that, you know, you don't ever want to buy anyone a present at all, just that you want to keep it in balance and remember why you're buying the present in the first place. Mm-hmm. And hopefully maybe the buying the presents can further the message of Christmas too.
Just again on the meeting that you were here for, mm-hmm, in Rome. Did anything extraordinary come out of that meeting? Anything that made you sit up and say, hey, wow, why didn't I think of that?
It was certainly exciting to be reflecting on this 40th anniversary of the encyclical that they were commemorating. And I think what was most powerful for me, having not attended one of these congresses before, was to be reminded again and experience the global reality, global dimension of our church. I mean, these were Justice and Peace Commission's directors, lay people and bishops and priests and women religious who are staffing these Justice and Peace Commissions all over the world. I mean, in India, in Malaysia, in the Philippines, in African countries, in Hong Kong. That was fascinating to hear what kinds of issues they're struggling with. And we had a working group session for about 2 hours with a smaller group of 25 people. The whole Congress was about 300 participants. And in that group, I was the note taker and had to report back. So I was really listening very intently to all the reflections. And everybody shared, we focused on the issue of conflict and what the Justice and Peace Commissions, what the local church, their local church was doing to address conflict. And it was incredible the kinds of things the Catholic Church, primarily through the Justice and Peace Commission in the diocese or the country, was doing to alleviate the roots of conflict, especially promoting interfaith, interreligious dialogue, inviting Muslim and Christian leaders to come to the table, addressing kind of roots of political conflict, discrimination in the Constitution. For example, in Pakistan, there's a lot of discrimination against Christians who can't really participate freely in elections as they might, you know, as would be hoped. Just all kinds of things that the church was doing to promote nonviolence and to promote interfaith dialogue and get at the roots of ethnic conflict was really powerful. And I think if Catholics in the United States could be aware of this, I mean, it's in relationship, I think. That's the one thing we shared in our report, that by meeting the people who are working on these issues that are not just theoretical. I mean, these are many cases, these are life and death issues of poverty and AIDS and whatever it might be, political violence. I mean, the church in Pakistan is in the middle of a, you know, political crisis and trying to help, you know, support democracy and justice there in Pakistan. So to meet the person who's the Justice and Peace staff person for the Catholic Church in Pakistan is fascinating. And I think for American Catholics, this could be very motivating and important to join in solidarity with the church around the world. And I think for all, Americans can be, you know, we can get focused, as you said, on shopping the day after Thanksgiving and the things, but to be reminded of the global, both the global reality of our world, but the global nature of our church, which is really powerful and wonderful and unique, is important. And so we're committed to just promote that awareness and maybe promote opportunities for Catholics to join with the church globally in solidarity to promote the common good.
Alexia Kelly is Executive Director of Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, which partners with over 20 national Catholic social justice organizations in the U.S. to advance Catholic social teaching in the media and in the public square. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.